Maybe. First half of the class, teaching you how to organize your data and some like guidelines of like how to structure your Mongo documents, and then second half revisions for like normalization and whatnot. Is that fair? Yeah. I'll try to be fast with this. It's just at least like, I don't know, one or two students will care about this, so then I should probably give it, you know, just so they don't have to go and learn it from the internet. So first is like, how do we model relationships? So like the one-to-one and one-to-one and end-to-end and all that stuff, how should that look when we have JSON documents? And then some general guidelines on what to do, and then some general guidelines on what not to do. So in Mongo and NoSQL in general, data is usually not normalized, right? We don't have like all the tables and all the very like structured way of handling data. It's just, you know, it's usually stored in a way where data that is retrieved or accessed together is together. So we reduce the number of queries we're making, and we can just easily get the stuff we need without having to do that many operations and stuff. So it's common to just embed documents into other documents or parts of it. The alternative would be to like have a reference, right? So here we have a patron, and then we have an address, right? And if we're modeling our JSON data the same way we would with like a normal relational database, then we would have like a field that references the patron that address is for, right? Like kind of like a foreign key. And then we would have these two collections, right? But usually when you're retrieving like one document, like if you want to get all the data for Joe, you don't want to also have to make another request and make another query also to get his address, right? That's a bit of a hassle when you can just have stuff nested inside. So then there we have Joe, and then we just have his address nested inside of an address field inside of that one document. And then we don't have two collections, we only have one. What if we, like, that guy had multiple addresses that we needed to keep track of? If it's just some values, like, oh, he has one address, or he has two addresses, or three, or four, or 10, then it's fine to just store stuff in an array. That's what arrays are for, right? You just have like a list of addresses and store them all like this and, you know, carry on, and you don't really need to do anything else, right? So we store the many side on the one side, right? Um, So if we need to store or if we need to access something on its own, so say here we have a bunch of parts, and those parts belong to or in a, like a catalog for a manufacturer. But we also need to access these parts like individually without knowing the manufacturer, for example. Like we want a list of all the parts and we want to get there directly. Then that's a compelling reason not to have stuff embedded into another document and just have it standing alone. In general, we try to avoid joins, but if it actually makes sense and if it's a way to like make the schema a bit more readable and understandable, then it's still like fine to have references to something that it's in another collection. But that was to some, like, what if we have like a lot of stuff, right? So, say we have like some social media stuff, and we're talking about like millions of users of, you know, millions of entries of data that need to be stored associated with something else. Or we just don't have that much of an idea of like how much these fields can grow, and it's just like an arbitrary value that can just be unbounded. In theory, if your application grows big enough, then, you know, that specific field can have, you know, millions of entries. Then you need to be aware that MongoDB documents have a limit for how much data they can have. And if we have like quite a bit of data, then that limit will be reached, which is not ideal. So some general guidelines is if you have up to like a couple of hundred things, just have that data embedded in the document. If you have more than that, up to like a few thousand, then just use some reference where you can like store the object ID or whatever in that document. And then if you have more than 1,000, then you shouldn't have an array at all. Then you should just store whatever is on the one side and the many side. So instead you kind of switch around what the reference is, right? So instead of having like, oh, here's a customer and they have a bunch of addresses, you just have here's all the addresses and each address has a specific user, right? And for many-to-many relationships, just use reference on both sides. At the end of the slides, there's a bunch of links that you can check afterwards. Any questions? Did it make sense? So one-to-one, embed, one-to-some, embed, or use reference, one-to-a-lot, use reference, or switch the relationship around. Many-to-many, just use reference. Yeah? Okay. So some patterns. So like, these are like just a bunch of guidelines that you don't need to. It's kind of like a solution for a problem that somebody already has run into. And it's common enough that somebody gave it a name, right? It's just like, this has happened enough times that, like, here's the solution, do that instead. So you have, like, approximation, which is, say you have, like, a view count. And every time somebody views a video or a page, you need to increment the value in the database, like, oh, here's another view. if you're going to make that request all those times, that can be a bit like time consuming, right? And you don't need to know exactly that the view has like 42,168 views or something, right? You just need to like have an approximation of what this value is. So instead, you can handle that in the application side and just have a counter that every time like 100 requests are made, I make a request to the database and update this value, right? And this is pretty much what this is. So you make fewer writes, and statistically, these values are still correct, right? But yeah, they don't need to be exact. And the problem is you have to do this in the application side. Attribute pattern. So if you have a lot of similar fields, you can move them all to like something that is nested like this. So if you have like a release date for the US or a release date for France or a release date for Italy, you can just have an array instead that has like, oh, what is the location for the release and what was the date, right? And this also covers like all the corner cases of, oh yeah, shit, like now this specific movie got released in like Eritrea or something, you know? This was unexpected, so now I need to add another field. If you have the right approach, then you just add another field to the array of that specific document. So bucket, I know in some previous years there was like some sensors things and like data was stored using like some time series of like there was a sensor and it read information and stuff, and then it was stored in a MongoDB database. To do that, you can use like a bucket approach, which is instead of just storing every measurement in a collection like this, or just have like document, 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 you can split them up into buckets of like here's a bucket of an hour, and then you put all the measurements as elements of an array in that specific bucket. And then if you need to do any specific calculations or any like statistic analysis or whatever, the data is already pre-grouped or pre-aggregated. So you can just like, oh, let me see what is the average for like what was the average trend per through like all these hours, and then you could just like go and take one bucket at a time and do that instead of just having some complex approach to do it. Computed pattern, this is basically you can instead, if you have a lot of reads in your application and if you don't have that many writes, so not that much new data is being added to the system, and if you have like some complex calculations that need to be done, it's easier to do it whenever you're inserting it than all the time when it's like being calculated or when it's being read, right? So say if you have like an extremely complicated, like go through all of the... Yeah, and an example is like go through all the transactions of a user and figure out like what their total amount in their account is, right? If that is happening every time somebody's checking their bank account, that could like take quite a bit of time. So instead, every time a new transaction is done, we store how much they have in their account in another field, and then we can just retrieve that value instead of having to like sum up their transactions all the time. Then you have like document versioning, so you can like keep track of if a schema of a document has changed or not. Yeah, just add that field and it'll make it easier to figure out like what a specific version a document has. Extended reference, so instead of embedding the entire data from another collection when we're like, you know, embedding stuff. You can just embed this like some specific fields that you actually use, and everything else can be in the other place. This will like save you time and space. Outlier, so don't design your databases and documents based on a specific like corner case of like something that might be like super different, so I need to account for it, so I'm going to make every document account for it. It's a lot of times it's just better to like what is the most common case, and then whatever is an exception is an exception, right? Don't screw up your database and all of your queries because, you know, something might be different. Pre-allocation. Polymorphy. So you don't need to create like different collections for data that is like somewhat similar. You can just have it all in the same collection, and then they have like different like they have like common fields, and then they have like specific different fields. Schema versioning. Subsets. So this is useful for example, when you have like, oh, give me all of the reviews, and you go to like complete and you like check an article and you want to see reviews, like the website isn't going to give you like, oh, here's like all the thousands of reviews that were made for this product. They're just going to give you 10, right? So those 10, since that data is stored right next to or is always going to be accessed with retrieving the product, those 10 can be stored as in, you know, latest reviews or top reviews or whatever. And then you can have another collection that would be like, here's all the reviews that would be retrieved when the customer hits, like get all reviews and gets all of them. This will make it so it's, you know, you're not transmitting all the data all the time, right? So if you have like a million entries, but you actually, you don't use all of them most of the time, you just use like 10 of them, like the most recent ones. Then you don't need to store it all in a document and have it like be bloated and slow. And then a tree, just basically store all the ancestors, so it's easier to navigate through stuff. Here's like some of the use cases. You can look at it later as well. But some of these like patterns are more useful for some applications, some for others. And then anti-patterns don't have like massive arrays, so don't have like unbounded, like, oh, I'm gonna just put everything into an array in a field because I can, and then you end up with like some huge clunky thing. Don't have like a lot of collections. Say for example, if you like create a new collection, which is a new table for every day for every customer, like create a collection for all the data that they've, you know, that you're collecting from them or something. Like the more collections you have, the slower your system is going to be. So don't use like the bucket pattern or something to take care of it. Don't have unnecessary indexes, so don't indexes take up room. Unless it's actually needed, don't create an index and remove all the stuff that isn't used. Bloated documents, so everything that is accessed together should stay together. All the other stuff, you know, put it somewhere else. Just have in the document what is actually needed instead of just storing everything in it. Don't separate data that is accessed together unless you actually need to, but this all depends from like case to case. And use case sensitive queries because it's faster than using rejects. And that's it. that's for the first half of the class. Second half of the class, just I guess you can start by asking any questions that you have, and then I can go over and like explain them and do some exercises and whatnot. So what are your struggles? What do you have problems with? Normalization? Anything else? Is that the only hard thing taught in this class? Not even that hard, even. But yeah. Just normalization? Yeah? All the questions about XML have been answered. Is that easy enough now? Yeah? Okay. Not the diagrams? Maybe. Okay, let me do this. So, introduction to databases, whatnot, yeah. Then we have all the SQL commands and selects and stuff. Do I need to do exercises about that, or can we just carry on? Like, I'll do like a full exam or something in the last lecture. But anything that needs to be explained, of like, I didn't understand this, like, how did I do this, whatever, no? Okay. Set operations, more select stuff. ER model, like all the diagrams and all the drawings and whatnot. Okay. Conceptual model validation, relational model. Okay. Functional dependencies normalization. Yeah, I guess that. Creating tables, constraints, triggers, and whatnot. And then like all the XML stuff. So XPath, XSD, all of that. Yeah. Okay. So just normalization then, and we can go. By the way, how's the assignments? We're almost over with part two, or not really, or Was last lecture good enough for you to copy all the stuff and onto the assignment, or do you need more? Okay. Yeah, I guess you can tell me what specific exercises it is, and then I can give you not the solution but something close enough. I guess. That's fair. Okay. But we'll start with normalization, yeah? Is that okay? Okay, cool. Open up the slides. Okay, so you understand why we need normalization, right? Like, we need it because otherwise, if stuff isn't normalized, then you'll introduce more redundancy, which means you're going to have like duplicated data in multiple places, like we've seen with like MongoDB, where you can like take somebody's address and then just store it in a bunch of different places. And that is bad because, you know, if you need to update that person's address, then you have to go through all the records that use that address and change it there as well, you know, which will take a bunch of time and is a hassle. But also, and that's like from the space perspective of like, oh, this takes too much space and it takes too much effort to like change these things. But also it's harder to like ensure that everything is consistent, right? So if you have a user and they make like orders, they're like always ordering stuff online, and then each order has the address of the user copied onto it, then if the user changes address, like that isn't a good example actually, because the order should have the address it was ordered to, not the current order of the user. Say if we just like copy everything every time we do something, and then that user like decides to change address, then we need to go and change like all the other addresses that are that depend on that one. As opposed to, you know, you change it to one place and everything else is taken care of, right? Do the functional dependencies make sense? Like when you have normally in a normalization exercise, you have like the table of data of like, oh, here's the data that we want you to normalize. And then here's like all the functional dependencies. Do you understand like what the functional dependencies mean? And you have like those arrows and like stuff on one side and stuff on the other side. Yeah. So it's basically, if we have A and then an arrow to B, that means that each value of A is associated with exactly one value of B, right? So if you have like one user, right? Let's say we have a user. If we have a user and then that user has like an ID and it has like a name, right? We can say that name is a functional dependency of ID because for one ID, it has exactly one name, right? And this can be the same for, let's say, a building. if we have like a list of like classrooms, right? Classroom, and then we have like building B that has like classroom one, and then building two that has like classroom two, and then building A that has one, and then we have like capacity, right? So like 30 people can go in this room, 40 can go in this, and 25 can go in this. So this is room, or this is building. This is room. And this is the capacity. So if you take the building, is there anything that like a building has exactly one of in this example? Not really, right? Like a building can have like multiple rooms, it can have multiple capacities. So there's nothing here that would like indicate that a building has exactly one of something. Does a room have exactly one of something? So a room, we have here this like one, and then we have 30, and then this isn't really the same room, but it has a different capacity as well, so it's a bit strange here, so we can just skip it for now. And then the capacity. Like what has exactly a capacity? Like, so like in this case, I use it specifically because it's a bit more like tricky. This is like the combination of a building and a room has exactly one capacity. So then like it's building and room capacity, right? Because for building A, room one, it has exactly like the capacity of 30. There's not like, it's not going to have like multiple capacities or anything. It's exactly one, right? For building one, room one, for building B, room one, it's going to be exactly 40. So that's what this means, right? For the thing that's like on the left side, so for A, which is building room, we're going to have exactly one capacity. That's like the dependency here. So if you saw something like this, right? If this was, first of all, like what form is this on? So like first normal form, second, third. Okay, we'll do that later then. You've been excused from the question. Okay, if this is the table, then what would be the primary key of this? Like what identifies a row? Like if you look at a row, right? What is a thing in this table? Like what are we trying to convey with the data? So we have rooms and we have their capacity. Like what is a row? What is it supposed to represent? Ah, shit, we're gonna have to have more than half of a class for this, I think. So here we're representing, we have like basically a list of rooms and their capacities, right? So a row gives you like a room in a specific building and their capacity, right? And then when you have something that can't solely be identified by a building or a room, say like you take room one, you don't know what room you're referring to. It can be like the room in this building, it can be the room in that building, you don't know, right? If you take a building, you don't know what room that building is referring to as well, right? Because we're gonna have like a bunch of rooms in this building, we're gonna have a bunch of rooms in that building, we don't know. But A1, that's pretty like unique, right? It's not gonna be like multiple rooms in building A that are going to have like the identifier of one, right? Unless somebody screwed up. So that is pretty like unique in the sense that, you know, this identifies a room, right? Room one in building A, then you know like where to go to, like if somebody gives you that like combination of like both the building and the room number. So that is what identifies a row, right? And that's what becomes the primary key. Because, you know, if I know these two things, then I know what the room is, and I can go to the room, and I can, like, identify it by just having this information. I don't need any other information. I just need this, right? If you had a, like, room code instead, which would be like A001. This could also be like a primary key because you, by just having this information, you know what room it is because there's not going to be any other room with like this code. But if we're just having, if we just have information like this, where that unique information is split between two columns, then like the primary key becomes the combination of those two columns, right? Does that make a bit more sense? No? Yeah. Okay. So that's it for functional dependencies. Do all of you understand what the arrows mean now? So if it's something on the left side, and then there's something on the right side, that means that the stuff that's on the left side has exactly one of whatever is on the right side, right? So here, if we have building and room, that means the combination of a building and a room has exactly one capacity, right? There's not going to be like multiple capacities for the same like room. It's only going to be one. Through all this stuff. Text and course. So the unnormalized form, or UNF, is this, where you have a table, and that table can have like a bunch of values for a single row. So imagine this, like if it was a JSON document, right, where you can have like arrays, and you can have like nested fields, and you can have like all this, you know, a mess of data. That is like what the unnormalized form is. It's just like, oh, I have a bunch of data and there's no structure to it, right? Then you have the first normal form, which is, then it's actually like a proper formal table where you have rows and you have columns, and for every row and for every column there's a value, right? So this is the same as like opening up Excel and just filling up all the cells with stuff. So this is the same as just like flattening the table, and you just duplicate all the data and you turn it into like one row is like just all these values together. And then if you need to repeat values, you repeat values. That's fine. So like, does this make sense for like the first normal form? That is the most more like straightforward one. So you have like a bunch of data, and then you just duplicate data until like every cell has exactly one piece of information in it. Then second normal form. So the data both has to be, the table both has to be in the first normal form, and every non-prime key attribute is fully functional dependent on the primary key. This basically means that if, is there a better example? No. But yeah, this, there we have that we have a bunch of columns, right? And we have social security number, a personal number, number of hours, and then employee name, something name, project name, project location. Yeah. So the process for like the second normal form normalization is basically we make sure that every thing that is on the right side of the functional dependency depends exactly on whatever's on the left side. So imagine this is the table, right? So we have like all these fields, and then we'd have the functional dependencies of social security number and P number. On hours. And then we have social security number and E name, and we have functional dependency 2. Functional dependency 3 is P number. Okay, so we have this table, right? So it has like a bunch of fields, And then the exercise is going to give you like, oh, here's all the functional dependencies for this specific table. The easiest thing is to like turn these functional dependencies into tables themselves, right? So that's what we've done there, which is like social security number and P number and hours becomes one table, and then social security number and the name becomes another table, and then the P number, P name, and P location becomes another table, right? You can see the relationship between these two, right? They're exactly the same. And usually when you do this, or not usually, but oftentimes if you just do that, which is like, I'm going to take the I'm going to take the functional dependencies and make them tables, and I'm going to say that whatever is on the left side of the functional dependency is the primary key. This is enough to get the exercise right, because a lot of times like the functional dependencies are just what you need, right? Does that make sense? So it's like a little cheat code. If you do that, you can see them from like previous year's exams. If you just like do exactly that, of just like taking the functional dependencies and copying them into tables, you just get the exercise right for free, basically. You don't even need to do anything. So that's for the second normal form. And for the third normal form. So this is when we start getting dependencies are, I'll just take a break now, I think, 15 minutes, 120. Okay. So. We've had like the second normal form, right? So then like for the third normal form, it's just there shouldn't be any things in the same table. There are transitively dependent on the primary key. And that basically means if there's a dependency such that like A, B, then B, C. There should be something that should be avoided. So, so here we have a relation like customer full address, and then we have the ID and all the fields of that address, and then we have that for one ID, there's going to be exactly one first name and one last name and one street and one street number, one postal code and one town, right? And then for one postal code, there's exactly one town, right? Which means this is transitively dependent on ID, right? Because we have the town, like for one ID, we have one postal code, and for one postal code, we have one town, right? So why do we have both the town and the postal code in the same table if, you know, if we know that, like, what the postal code is, we know what the town is, right? So we don't need to have it, like, every time for every row, right? So these don't all need to be in the same table because this could arise the problem where it'd have the same postal code, right? If you're just like inserting stuff and you have like 1, 2, address 2, address 3, and then you have like the same postal code for different addresses, right? It could be that would create the opportunity of somebody inserting data that is not correct, right? Of like inserting the same postal code, but different towns for the same postal code, which is not valid, right? Like if we know that 2819 is in Gjøvik, we don't need that extra information in the table. And instead we can have another table that would be like 2819 is Gjøvik, and that's it. Right. That's what that means, basically. Does that make sense? I can just do exercises now, I guess. So this is the exam from 2020. And that's 2A. Does the exercise make sense? So we have a table with data, and then we have the functional dependencies, and what it asks is normalize it, right? Give us the primary key and the foreign keys. Which usually means there's like, you know, write some sort of, or make like a scheme of like a relational model of like how this should look in 3NF, right? So with the explanations that I've given to you now, do you think you can solve it? Or do you still need more information of like how to do this? How much time do we have? Half an hour. Okay. I can turn on the lights. Where is it? Is it here? Is it bees? No. Okay. You were the one that initially complained that you wanted normalization, right? Do you want to come and solve it? Are you looking at the solutions? Okay. Yeah, then, yeah, that was it. That's pretty much it. That's all there is to it. So, like, they might also ask you in what form this, like, table is in, right? And, so first, there are no repeating values, right? So that means it's not in the first normal form because every value is different for like the key of the rows. And then it's also all of the so it is in first normal form. Then it's also in second normal form, because for every column that we have, it is functionally dependent on what the key for that row is. So you take chain and product number, right? For every chain and product number, we have exactly one model and one manufacturer, right? So if we take like power and 110047, we know what the model is going to be and we know what manufacturer it's going to be, right? So these two are dependent on this. And then for every model and manufacturer, we have a exactly one capacity and one interface type. So then if we have the chain and the product number, we know what manufacturer and model this is going to be. And since we know the manufacturer and the model, then we also know the capacity and the interface, because we have it here, right? That each model and manufacturer has exactly one capacity and one interface type. So these are also like transitively dependent on the key, which is chain and product number, right? And then since we have like the manufacturer, and the manufacturer has exactly one nationality, then we also know what the nationality is, right? So what basically ends up happening is we have like the chain and the product number, and then knowing those, we know the model and the manufacturer, whatever. And then from that, we know the capacity and the interface type. And then from the manufacturer, we know the nationality. But just by knowing the key, we can infer everything else, right? Because everything kind of leads back to what the key is. Which means this data is already in the second normal form, because everything that is like on the right side of the table, that is not the key, depends on the key in one way or another, right? Which then means the only thing that's left is going from like the second normal form to the third normal form. And here it's basically remove all of these like transitive relationships from the data. Because if we know like from the chain and product number, we know the model and manufacturer, and knowing the model and manufacturer, we know the capacity. So, model, manufacturer, interface type. There's actually no repeating data there. Yeah. But for example, if we know the manufacturer and we know the nationality, like why do we have this data here? If these pairs are always going to be the same, right? Like Seagate is always going to be in the USA, so this is kind of redundant to have here. We don't really need to have this repeated like 1,000 times for every Seagate hard drive that we have. We don't need to have like 1,000 USAs, because that information can be represented with only one column or with only one row. So instead of having all of this data in a single table like this, then what you can do is just like, that's why I said like the easy shortcut is to just take the functional dependencies and just do like prod number and then model Right, and this is the primary key. And then for model, and manufacturer, we have capacity. Interface type, and this is the primary key, and then we have manufacturer, and nationality. And this is the primary key. So you just take all the functional dependencies, whatever's on the left becomes a primary key, and everything else just becomes something else. And then we have like a bunch of keys, or we have a bunch of tables, and this data is kind of like all related to each other, right? So what we need to do is basically name what the foreign keys are to just kind of like relate all these data between the tables. So you take foreign key, because we have this pair here of model and manufacturer, and this also exists in this table. So these can both be like the foreign key there, and then this is also a foreign key from this table. Right? So it's basically what you said, exactly. Does it make sense? Ish? No? A bit more, at least? You're probably, like, a lot of times you just take whatever the functional dependencies are, do that, and then close your eyes and hope it's the right thing. I probably won't do that in the exam, because that would be too easy, I think. Okay. All the previous exams, I think basically all the exercises could just be solved by doing this, which is kind of disappointing. Well, like, as in the sense that, because I can tell you, like, oh, just do this, just copy, like, the functional dependencies, and you'll be okay, but you don't really understand what you're doing, right? So I would like a few better examples of doing this, but yeah. But if the solution for the exercises is just that, no one has an excuse for failing that exercise, because that is fairly easy to do, right? You do understand how to do it now, right? Or ish, yeah. Yeah, I kind of have to, right? Well, it would be actually a bit more of an interesting exercise if you didn't have any functional dependencies, and you'd have to be like, oh, like make an assumption about the functional dependencies in this data and then normalize it. Oh, maybe I should do that. That seems interesting, actually. No. But Yeah, usually the exercises have always given the functional dependencies. So, but I think like the majority of the points should be for, you know, at least being able to do this, but it also seems like quite easy after you like know the hack to do it, right? So, so we'll see. I'll talk with Dipti about all this stuff tomorrow, so you'll know the outcome next week. Yeah, so exercise 2B. Who else had questions? Or who else had like doubts about doing this? Do you want to solve the exercise? Do you want to solve the exercise? No, thank you. Yeah. So, yeah, well, now you know how to do like normalizations. That's it. Okay, what normal form is this table at the moment? So there's a VIN, and that's unique, right? So there's no repeating values. So then it fits the first normal form. And there's also like no like compound values. There's no like weird stuff going on. And then if you look at all the dependencies, like nationality depends on manufacturer, right? And manufacturer depends on the VIN. So that's, then we ensure that, you know, nationality depends on VIN, or like one VIN as is exactly one nationality, right? Because if you just follow the arrows, you'll get there. And then a model or a VIN also has one model and one variant and one manufacturer. So like that's, you get that from the first one. And then since it has exactly one or like a combination of those three, and then you have the engine and the MSRP, which are also dependent on those three, which means like a VIN is going to have exactly one engine and one MSRP. So like all those, all the values on the right side that aren't VIN are functionally dependent on the VIN, so it's already in second normal form. And then it's not in third normal form because you have like all these transitive dependencies on stuff, which is like duplicated data. So it's in 2NF. And that's why I need to convert it to 3. Yeah? Okay. Let me see if I can find an exercise from previous exams where the professor was an asshole. Client number. Number and then client number and all those and room number, room type. No, it's all the same. So sad. Yeah, I'll try to make some harder exercise for tomorrow. Well, if you're just copying like what the functional dependencies are, that's not that much of a challenge, is it? I think so, at least. Yeah. I don't know, 10 points out of how much? No, yeah. It's like that's just giving free points, I think. Yeah. Yeah, but it's probably to raise some eyebrows if it's like, oh, all the students got an A. Yeah. I don't think anyone would believe that if everybody got an A. The most logical explanation was the exam was too easy. They don't know anything. So, but yeah, I can make some exercise so you can be prepared for trickier stuff than just like the easy exercise. It'll probably still be an easy exercise though. Because I still don't want you to fail, but at least like you have. I shouldn't have said anything. I want to put the fear in you that you'd like, you know, this is going to be a hard exam, and then you'd like get there and be like, oh, that's super easy. So you'd be more relaxed. It's always bad when it's the opposite, where it's like you're like, oh shit, I know everything, and then you get there and you're like, oh fuck. So I want to give you the opposite experience, but yeah. No, the exercise is probably going to mirror these, but I still want you to at least have the experience of what it is to do it without functional dependencies, or doing it when the functional dependencies don't map exactly to what the table should be, right? We can leave, I guess. That's enough. If you have any other stuff that you want me to go through, just send me an email or say it directly, and I can do that. Otherwise, I'm gonna run out of stuff to do, and then I just have to like do full exams here or whatever. But that's kind of boring for me, so then I'm gonna start calling people from the crowd to solve the exercises, and then I can just sit here and watch. You are more than welcome to like not come to the lectures, but that's also bad for you because then you won't learn. So, but at this point, it's your decision. What do you prefer, like being embarrassed for like 10 minutes and then maybe failing the exam, or taking that embarrassment and then you pass the exam? You know, it's your choice. It's like no one is going to remember that you came to the whiteboard and fucked up that one time. You know, you're not even going to remember this class or me in like 5 years. Yeah, no. I mean, I don't remember like most of my professors. But there are people that I've just like completely forgot, and I've like forgotten their classes and stuff. So you're going to go through the same. So like 5 minutes of embarrassment will be okay, because the knowledge is going to be burned into the back of your mind by the embarrassment, and then you're never going to forget it. So.